This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You're going to go make the babies and then come talk to me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
And so even when River came along, you know, the entire plan was always reunification up until the parent couldn't prove that they could be safe, you know.
Right, right.
So, yeah, when he came to us, we had no idea, like, what that would look like. So we just went into it wholeheartedly, enjoying the experience of having a child, having a baby and going through that and sleepless nights, you know, all the things you look forward to.
All the things you look forward to. And then why?
Right?
Why do we look forward to that? But yes, yes, yes.
And then, yeah, it was 2.5 years later that we were able to finalize his adoption.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I am your queer host. And this is the show, as y'all know, that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families and all of our fabulous identities. And y'all, it is Pride Month, and this is the final episode of what I lovingly refer to as our Pride Extravaganza. Yes. Yes, all month long, Pride Month. Y'all have gotten 2 episodes per week. Amazing, amazing. 2 episodes of queer family goodness. And this one does not disappoint. It's a really beautiful episode and it covers like all the bases, to be quite honest. I sat down with Haven and Coy. They are the parents to a little guy, a little 6-year-old, who they got through the foster to adopt. And they had a very long journey to get to where they are, including a fertility journey, IVF, IUI, known donors, anonymous donors. Like, we cover a lot of bases here, y'all. And it's a really good episode. And they also created a film that you're going to hear about in the episode as well. So stay tuned. You're in for a good one. And I just want to say, I hope y'all had a really special, wonderful Pride. You deserve all the love. You deserve to feel like you belong, and you deserve to feel uplifted and celebrated, not just this month, but every month, but especially this month. I hope y'all are enjoying yourselves out there and y'all had great Pride celebrations. I love you all. And I'm going to take a little tiny hiatus, take a month off, and then I'll be back with season 20, Bishes. And we have some fun things planned to celebrate season 20. What? Including a couple of in-studio episodes where the video is not just me looking into Zoom, but I'm actually in the room with my guests, which, what? How exciting. And some other big things around the horizon too. So we're still going. It's still going. We'll be on a little tiny hiatus, but I will be all over social media as I always am. So make sure you're following us at the Queer Family Podcast on all the platforms. And I will continue sharing older episodes that might have been forgotten on our little hiatus. So keep tuning in. I'm still going to be here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm never stopping this passion project. I love it. All right, y'all. Happy Pride. Happy Pride all year. And I'll see you soon. Enjoy this episode. Helen, Beulah, June is almost over. Can you come roll this tape? We get a break. They don't exist. I don't have assistants. I have to make them up. All right. Oh, I forgot to tell y'all. In this episode, there are a lot of distractions because they were home with their son, their 6-year-old, who made some appearances and at one point was pretending to be a cat because he's 6 and that's what we do. And a dog. So there were interruptions. You got to flow with it. Y'all know what it's like. You've dealt with my interruptions a million times. So hang tight. It's a wonderful episode. All right. Talk to y'all soon. Here we go. Roll this tape. Let's go.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Haven and Coy.
Hello. Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride. And y'all are part of the Pride Extravaganza. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know when this would be airing. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Pride Extravaganza, you have to sing it, is double the episodes the entire month of June. So I've been like crazy lately.
To save the listeners, I will not sing it, but you're welcome to.
Yeah, I have to. It's my thing. It's what I do. It is wonderful to meet you. I've heard a lot about your story, and I'm so excited to dig in.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Without further ado, I know I am. And just so the listeners know, they have a lively house happening right now. As happens, there is their son is there at the house, River, and it sounds like there's a dog.
Yes, there is. We have a beautiful Australian Shepherd who likes to be very vocal sometimes.
Yeah. So all y'all, you know, take it with stride because they're used to it with me. My dog is literally on the bed right now, actually sleeping. She's going to get up and interrupt at some point during this episode, too. And the listeners are used to this. Anyway, okay, so what's her name?
Come here. Coda.
Coda.
Come here, baby.
She'll calm down after a while. Oh, my God. Look at her. That's probably because River's outside.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Let's get right into this. Your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. So are you ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay, on your mark, get set, go.
I'm Haven Garber. This is my wife, Koi. We're here today because we have a 6-year-old son. We met kind of a little later in life and went through a lot of different processes, including IVF, and then finally through foster to adopt. And we're here to talk about that and that my son just starred in a movie that I wrote and produced and directed. So very excited to talk about that, too.
Amazing. You did it. You did it in under 30. Nice work. Nice work. It's like better than I would do. And that's really exciting. So let's dig in. I want to hear. So you said you met a little later in life. Can we go into that story a little bit?
Absolutely.
Well, Haven was my first stalker. Huh?
Only in a good way, though, right? A good stalker.
Yeah.
Oh.
Good one. I'm a comedian and I was newly into the world of women, dating women, as a middle-aged baby dyke.
Attic girl.
And so I was doing a bit about that process, and uh-huh. Haven was in the audience, and I was also on stage as two other personas, so I was three different personas, and Haven thought to themselves, I didn't know I had a type.
Yeah, she first came out, she is a professional musician too, and so she was accompanying a spoken word artist, and I was like, oh, she's cute, and then they came out with a power tool orchestra, so there's like 20 women on stage, and they're playing power tools, and I noticed her, and every time she was dressed differently, so I'm like, oh, wow, like, there's a theme. I didn't realize I was watching the same woman the entire time, and then she comes out and does her comedy act, and it was just really good, and I'm like, I think I have a type. I've never had a type before, and so, yeah, I ended up finding her.
Fluid and schizophrenic.
That's a good type. I mean, I gotta say, the whole act sounds very queer.
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
Can I ask you, Koi, what do you think took you so long to come to your true, authentic self? Or did it take long? Like, did you always know? And you were just like.
The queer part of it is like the tiniest part of it. It's more about a journey of shedding identity and becoming free of any boxes. And so when the boxes opened and the identities took flight, Haven showed up.
And there it is. And there we are. And that was done.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like.
And so I like to say I'm in part of my comedy routine. I say I'm married to a lesbian, but I don't identify as one. But I don't identify as bi either. I don't have an identity.
Yeah, you're just box free.
Yeah.
You're wall free. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I love that. And we all are deserving of whatever identity we choose to freaking have. Like, who says it has to be any sort of witch away? I love that for you. Yes. So you confirmed. I had a guest who said, I don't say coming out. I say confirmed because I've been this way all along. So you confirmed who you were, which was boxless, which I love. And Haven, how about you? Like, when did your realization come, so to speak?
Oh, I was very young. So I knew when I was a teenager, even probably before then, you know, at first it was like, oh, you'd see a woman and be like, oh, I aspire to be that. And it's like, no, I really don't aspire to be that. I just want that.
I just want to kiss that.
Like. Yeah, exactly. So I've been out for a very long, long time.
Perfect. And you met at this magical evening, sounds like. And
well, we didn't actually meet.
This is where the stalking part.
Right.
Oh, right. We didn't cover that part.
So little did I know that Haven was sitting right in front of where I ended up sitting in the audience after I was done. And we were being very rude about the other acts, like the quintessential lesbian folk artist acoustic guitar stuff that was prevalent in this particular. Not to be offensive or to, you know, I love all of it. And yet I was next to a person who was laughing at all of it. And so, and Haven would just keep looking back at us. And I go, shh, to my friend. And then I found out this was who was in front of me and was jealous and wished they were a part of the whole thing.
Well, and I ended up stalking her on Facebook. That's where the stalking came in. And so I sent this very long message that I thought was very heartfelt and not as long as she says it is, but you know, it was probably a little wordy. And so 3 days later, so this is while we were in Anchorage, Alaska. So very small community, very small town. And I show up to this women's dance thing that happens every Wednesday night. And then I realized she's there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so I sent this long Facebook message. So either she saw it and I freaked her out and she wants nothing to do with me, or she hasn't seen it yet. And then if she puts the pieces together later on, then I'm going to really look like a creep if I don't say something to her tonight.
Right. Oh, it's a conundrum. It is a conundrum. I feel your pain.
So, yeah, so I went up to her and started talking, and then that was when we first met. And then 11 days later, she moved to Juneau, Alaska.
Oh.
After 11 days. Yeah. Oh. So we got to know each other pretty quickly, but then we basically just stayed in contact while she was in Juneau for the summer. And
then I decided I couldn't move to Juneau permanently because of a certain human that was, that had moved into my condo while I was gone.
And changed the locks.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Whoa, so, you got stalkers. You get people moving in. Coy.
Yeah.
The plot thickens.
They were helping me out because my former tenant left. And so it was helpful that they moved in to take care of the cat and stuff. But
yeah. And then she said, oh, well, you know, I'll be traveling a lot. So you can stay at my condo in Anchorage and, you know, we'll just touch base. And she came back to Anchorage and never left. And then, you know, 12 years later, we are.
Yep. There it is. A little bit of a U-Haul situation.
Not quite.
But yeah. So. Yeah. In a weird way, it was a U-Haul situation. A long extended long distance one for a little bit, though. But yeah.
It happens. These things happen.
When you know, right?
When you know, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Some stereotypes exist for a reason.
I was told that I could leave the title of Baby Dyke if I've had two failed relationships. And I didn't really have real relationships, so I couldn't know how to define myself and when I would be officially not a baby and in the world, you know, just accepted. And it turns out that I couldn't be accepted until I had somebody next to me that would out me wherever I went.
Interesting.
So. She calls me her mullet. Because if she's out by herself, like no one assumes
nobody
she's
would
gay.
Know.
Even we were at a gay pride event here in Oregon a few weeks ago and someone said, oh, thanks for being an ally. And she's like, I'm all in.
I have rainbow tattoos and I have a rainbow umbrella. And she goes, thanks for being an ally. I'm like, where's my wife? Where is she? Get over here.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. I get confused as a non-queer a lot as well. I cut my hair, I shave the sides of my head, and I still get mistaken. I'm like, no, come on. I do everything I can. I started a podcast so that everybody knows. So funny. But I love how we have these like guidelines, Baby Dyke. Oh, no, you didn't graduate yet. Like, did you get your toaster yet? Remember that joke?
Yes.
The toaster oven or whatever. Oh, Lord. Okay, so you found each other we hit some stereotypes. And then when did family building come into the picture? And what was that conversation like?
Well, it was actually, I was going through my own family building journey when she entered my life. So, yeah, I had been a foster parent when I lived in a different town and just hadn't transferred my license to Anchorage yet. And then I was in the middle of doing IVF on my own.
Oh,
in,
whoa.
Yeah. You know, I was 39 at the time, I think, 38 or 39, and I knew I wanted to be a parent, and I hadn't found a partner that was willing to take that journey with me, and it was important enough that I wanted to try it.
And so you were doing the single parent by choice route.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when we had talked, you know, in our previous relationships and life, we had both came to the conclusion that we both wanted our own children and then possibly fostering or adopting additional children. So we kind of already had that mindset. The IVF didn't take. So we started fostering. So she came back to Anchorage and then we got licensed.
Okay, I'm going to pause you because I want to know, I want to dig into the IVF journey a little bit. And so since you are already, Haven, on the path towards single parent by choice, had you already picked out a donor? And what was it, a known donor, anonymous donor? Like, what's the story there?
I tried a little bit of everything. So on the IVF specific journey, I had picked an anonymous donor through a sperm bank. Mm-hmm. I had tried medicated IUIs while I was in a small town in Alaska called Dillingham, Alaska. I have a funny story about that, but we can talk about that later.
We could talk about it. I don't know.
So I lived in a very small town. We're going to get sidetracked here. And there's 2,500 people in this town. And I was having frozen sperm delivered. And, you know, you only have like 7 days, right, from the time it ships. Yeah. And there was this one time that I was expecting a shipment. And I'm like, no, I really have to find this. And there's no mail delivery in Dillingham, Alaska. Everything goes to the post office. Like there's no personal delivery. And I'm like, I swear, I have to just go back there. Let me go look and I will find it. They told me it's here.
They said it wasn't there.
They said it wasn't there. So I'm like, God, walking around the back of the post office in Dillingham, Alaska, looking for a mushroom shaped package that I knew contained sperm.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is my life. Like, what is going on?
Oh my God. Yeah. But that's so like, these are our stories. That's it right there. Did you find it?
I did find it. Yes.
Isn't it big?
Yeah, it's big. It's like that big. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like hard to miss. Like, I don't know what they were looking for back there, but geez.
Bear was juggling it.
Yeah. Just to make it truly Alaskan.
An eagle was like,
oh my God. So you had done the anonymous sperm route and tried with medicated IUIs and IVF and
nothing ever took. Once we got together and she moved back to Anchorage, we actually had a known donor. We had a friend of hers who was also a professional musician, and he agreed to help us. So we did like the medicated IUI thing a couple more times, and unfortunately, it never took.
So your friend went to the actual clinic to donate, and then you did it at the clinic. It wasn't at home.
No, we did it at home. Like I was doing the shots, but we did it at home, which also was
traditional
weird.
Method, the turkey baster.
The turkey baster, yes, the turkey baster method. I call it that all the time. I'm very scientific on this show. Yeah, the turkey baster method. That didn't work either.
No. Mm-mm.
And how did the conversation with your friend go, might I ask? Like, what did you ask? Like, how did you take him out to drinks? Like, how'd you do that?
Did we take him out to drinks?
I don't think we even took him out to drinks. Oh. I think we invited him over. It was after one of the concerts that they were performing in, and we invited him over and we're just like, you know, we really like you. He was a really nice guy, you know, musically talented. And yeah, he was great with it. He was more than willing to do it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's awesome. Shout out to known donors who are awesome. So you tried a couple times and then what changed? Like what happened?
Well, we just actually kept trying. Like I don't know if I added up all of the money that we spent on medicated IUIs and IVF, you know, we could probably buy another house. It's been insane.
I'm right here with you. Same, same.
Yeah.
Same, same. The amount. Oh, and we didn't go into the conversation on as to who would carry. Like, Haven, I know you were already on this track, but like, Coy, did you have any feelings about wanting to carry, or did you have any cares about the genetic? You're already like, no, not at all.
I mean, I was already late into my 40 or mid 40s by then or so. Mm-hmm. So I was like, nah. Yeah. And I mean, I'd already had a miscarriage with a former spouse. And I entered into that thinking, well, I want to be a part of the world of that cycle of life. And I wasn't against it, but I've never had the burning desire to give birth.
Okay,
so
that's
it. Was kind of a relief. And it's like, okay, good. It's on you.
It's on you. It's perfect when it happens this way. And yeah. And we all are in agreement. Yep, it's all you. That's great. Let's go. So you were saying, Haven, you kept trying. You spent a lot of money. I know this. I know the journey. And take us down the path. What happened?
We eventually moved to Oregon, and I found a great doctor up in Portland who's supposed to be like world renowned, or at least renowned in the States. And so we went through the process again. Again, this time we just did medicated IUI. I was already 40 years old. I felt like if it was going to happen, it'd happen. And I just wanted to try one more time. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, we used a sperm donor from a sperm bank, but also we had found a local person here who was willing to also donate. Wow. So I was kind of trying to hedge my bets by using both mm-hmm. at the same time to increase my chances.
Uh-huh. That's a fun spin. Okay.
And I actually did get pregnant for about 6 weeks. We had a positive test. We're taking, you know, all the medications to hopefully make it stick. And then it ended up miscarrying. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was hard. And then we, you know, it was just like, I don't know. I thought about doing it one more time after that, but the older you get, the more complications there are. And I was just felt like, are we really trying to force this when it's not meant to be? And we had already started the fostering here in Oregon.
Right.
We were foster parents in Alaska, and then we came down here. And since that was already, you know, it felt like a parallel track, like it was never meant to be either or.
Mm-hmm.
So we had became foster parents pretty quickly when we moved down here. Wow. And we had some foster kids, and, you know, they'd stay for a little bit. And when I had the miscarriage, we had a pretty significant conversation where we're like, okay, like, what is it that we really want? And part of it was, I was so devastated by the back and forth on the getting pregnant and then having the miscarriage. And it was just like, is the fostering replacing that now? And if so, is that really what I want? You know, it's hard to put your heart into something 100% when you know it's not exactly what you want. And plus, it's really hard to say no. Like, you know, you have these kids and you get calls all the time. And even if you know it's not a good fit, it's really hard to say no. Here's this kid who needs help.
Yeah.
And yet you don't want to cause more trauma by it not working out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And so I got tired of being the person who said no all the time, because I'd say yes to everything. And, you know, and then things don't work out. And then there's guilt on top of that, you know. And so we had decided that Coy would be the one to take the phone calls, because she was in a better headspace to say yes or no and really make that kind of commitment. So we're like, okay, you take the phone calls. And then next time we meet with our certifier, we're going to tell them that we're just done, that we were happy being married. We were living life, enjoying each other, you know, that maybe we just weren't meant to have children. So 2 days later, she gets the phone call, because now she's the contact for a 17-day-old baby.
And is this... would this be like the first time that a baby came?
Yes, this was the first time that we had a little one. We fostered everything from children like 4 years old up to 18 year old.
Wow.
But I really still wanted that like baby experience. Mm-hmm. And we never got that phone call. And then so the first time Coy gets the phone call, it's for a baby.
And what did Coy say?
Coy was like, she said, yes, of course.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh, Coy said, not, that door's closed.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so like 3 hours later, we're driving to Portland and have a 17-day-old baby in our car.
3 hours later. Yeah, holy 3 hours. Moly. Were you like prepared for that?
Not prepared at all. We didn't have a crib. We didn't have a car seat. Luckily, you know, a lot of my coworkers and friends, they're like, here, take this, take that, and had us set up that evening. So it was great.
We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Okay, y'all, interrupting for 1 second, because as you can see from this here story, it takes a village to create our families the LGBTQIA way. And I have a promo code for you if you're looking to create your family via the anonymous sperm route, like my wife and I did. It is with California Cryobank, the cryobank that has been serving the LGBTQIA community for 45 years and counting, and who have wonderful, wonderful resources for this here community. All you're going to want to do is go to cryobank.com, enter code QUEERFAM25, and that's going to get you a level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that code towards a level 3 subscription to their donor catalog, which gives you even more information about the donor and the medical backgrounds and all the things we need to know when we're making these very, very important decisions. So go ahead, go to cryobank.com, enter that code QUEERFAM25, and let's make some more queer families, because you know I love to hear about them, and then come tell me. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Love is love.
I know there's fostering, and then there's like fostering in with the hopes of adoption. And so you were kind of already on that track in the beginning, or was it just kind of a let's see as we go type situation?
Yeah, in Oregon, they don't really have a specific foster to adopt plan. Like either you can be a resource parent for foster kids or you do the adoption track. But if you do the purely adoption track, the chances of getting a very young child is less likely because mm-hmm. they have to go through the process.
Right.
So our plan was always like we went into fostering knowing that what fostering was and that it was probably not a permanent solution or permanent lead to adoption. And so even when River came along, you know, the entire plan was always reunification up until the parent couldn't prove that they could be safe, you know.
Right. Right.
So yeah, when he came to us, we had no idea like what that would look like. So we just went into it wholeheartedly, enjoying the experience of having a child, having a baby and going through that and sleepless nights, you know, all the things you look forward to.
All the things you look forward to. And then why? Right? Why do we look forward to that? But yes, yes, yes.
And then, yeah, it was 2.5 years later that we were able to finalize his adoption.
Wow. It's amazing. And it feels like it's one of those stories where you like it comes when it comes. It comes at the right time, right? Like sometimes it's just there's these moments that you can look back on and be like, oh, that's what was meant to happen. But while you're going through it, mm-hmm. it feels like such an arduous, right? Torturous journey, right? But yeah. I mean, if that can't give you hope, I don't know what can. And that's beautiful. I want to hear the journey towards y'all ending up becoming his legal parents and like how that all played out and what it was like, because I know like the longer you have this kiddo with you, the harder it's going to be to say goodbye. I can only imagine. I mean, and maybe you fall in love the very first day, and like, can you go down that a little bit and talk about that?
With every, like Haven has mentioned that each child's its own story and their own pocket of acceptance and whatever, you know, we need to mm-hmm. like be there for the child and be whatever needs to happen and whatever's right for them and for us. And so just to be completely, it's a crazy world to foster because you have to give so much and say they're yours and yet they're not, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was always from the very beginning, no child belongs to me. Period. Uh-huh. Even if I had given birth to them, just to maybe start off with that mindset too. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't own them. So I'm a steward, I guess, or I'm I'm just a facilitator of this being in this particular form. Yeah, that's a nice caveat, a nice attempt to try and distance oneself from the potential pain, you know.
Right. And it's a grounding basis, right? It's a grounding basis that you kind of have to start from.
Yeah. And so the family was, we were always invited to come with his first mom to family gatherings, the big ones, you know, like Christmas. And so it wasn't just, it's her visitation, so we can't be a part of it. So it was really nice that the family was always very inclusive.
Oh, that's nice.
And very involved. And then when his, when Brooke died.
That's his.
His first mom.
Oh. Yeah.
And so it's still, he was, you know, his grandmother and papa, you know, we're still part of the family. They have a very large family with lots of interesting weavings of people and, you know, who are you and how are you related? And so we just kind of blended right into, now who are you? You know, it's like everybody else. And so it's been not a happy ending per se, but also good for his well-being that he has family here. And
such a huge family. And it sounds like a huge chosen family, which is like so queer, in my opinion, and amazing.
Yeah, don't tell them that, but yeah.
I don't know. We can cut that out.
No, that's fine. That's the joke.
Yeah, it's just a joke. I know. They wouldn't have been happy with you as his parents if that was something that wasn't accepting.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
So that's great. So it sounds like it was somewhat of a journey that had some hardship in it to get to where you got to.
So we live in Salem, and his birth mom and Case was in Portland. And within like 2.5 weeks of him being with us, they actually called and said, well, we think that we're going to place him somewhere closer. So after, you know, just 2.5 weeks, and it's just this like, you know, this is why there's such a problem. And these kids keep getting re-traumatized because even, you know, sure, it's only been 2.5 weeks, but he was a month old. He had already been with us like half his life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why kids who go through the foster system have such attachment issues, is because they get moved around so frequently. And I'm like, this is just how the pattern starts. Like, and so luckily I had met one of the higher ups in the foster care system through a leadership program. And I actually wrote him a letter. I said, you know, I'm not asking for any favors, but at the same time, like, this is not a good choice for this child. And who can I talk to? Because we really don't want him removed. And then I got a call on a Saturday. And if you know anything about government workers, they don't always work on Saturdays, right?
No.
You don't get a phone call on Saturday from the head of the department. We had a long conversation, and she's like, well, if you're willing to drive up there 3 days a week so he can visit his mom, because of course, when they're that young, they want as much contact with the bio parents as possible. And I'm like, absolutely, we'll do that. You know, we'll go up there 5 days a week if we have to. Just don't start moving this kid around.
Yeah.
So luckily, at that time, Koi wasn't working. And so, she would have to drive up there 3 to 4 times a week for visits, which, you know, it's a hardship, but it's what you do, right?
Yeah.
And it's what's best for the kid. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. And luckily, he wasn't removed from our home.
Oh, wow. Advocate for yourselves, y'all. Speak up. Speak up. There it is, right there.
And then the pandemic happened. And so that put a kind of a damper on.
What is a pandemic?
Visits.
Pandemic war?
That's good. He doesn't know. That's good.
He was very young. So
was it a war?
We'll talk about it,
pandemic
sweetheart.
War?
Yeah. We'll talk about it, sweetheart.
It was a war?
It wasn't a war, baby. Yeah. So the pandemic definitely slowed things down. Like, we stopped having court hearings. And, you know, like in most cases, you know, Brooke would start doing what she needed to do to, you know, have more visits and so forth. And then it wouldn't be sustainable.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of back and forth of, you know, oh, well, she's doing better. We're going to extend the case and extend the case, and things just get dragged on. And totally understand, like, I'm an attorney by trade, and I used to represent foster kids in Anchorage. So if the foster kid had a conflict with what DHS wanted for them, then I would step in and be an advocate for the kids. So I get it. And, you know, it's always under the assumption that what we're doing is best for the children. And
of course. Yeah.
And it's difficult because it's not how we go about what we think is best for the children isn't always the best.
Yeah. Oof. It's a lot that goes into it. And I do understand that reunification is always, always, always the goal, of course, and it makes perfect sense. And also, that is just hard on all parties. Like, it's just, it's hard. And it's too bad that there are so many children who need loving homes.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a pair of siblings when we were in Anchorage who were on the ICWA side. So they were Native American, Native Alaskan, which adds another layer of complexity to it because you understand why the preferred placement is with a Native family, but it's also very difficult when there's a lot of roadblocks that end up not being helpful for the kids.
Yeah, I don't know what you do to make it better for everyone.
Yeah, hopefully there's people in the system that listen to other options, not just what's on paper.
Right. Empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Empathy and listening goes a long way, right? If we want to have real sustainable, positive change. But River is all over. He's loving this. I see a career in, there is a career because we have to talk about the movie.
Yeah.
But I just want to say it's amazing that you two and other folks like you are out there providing these loving homes and, you know, being upstanders for the ones who need it the most, these children. So kudos to you. Kudos. Yeah.
Yeah. We had some issues during the pandemic with just multiple exposures from the kids and them being out in the public and doing family visits. And we wanted to make sure that River had a lot of steadiness in his life. So we actually gave up our foster license when we finalized the adoption, because also, you know, when you take on other kids, because you're foster parents, it also, you can't help but have it affect your home as well. And, you know, kids who, of foster parents and resource parents can, hi, sweetheart, can also cause trauma. So we really wanted to make sure that we prioritize his well-being. You know, our hopes is that someday when he's a little older and we maybe have a little bigger of a house, that we would open our home to older children, queer kids who are having hard times in their own families. So that is our hope.
That's amazing. Okay, that's baby. Awesome. So River's being a cat over here.
I know.
So
sorry.
I'm used to it. This is par for the course. Let's segue into this film you wrote and created and tell folks at home about it and all the things.
Yeah. So
I'm an actor.
I have heard and I am noticing.
What's your character's name?
Elliot.
Elliot? Yeah.
Elliot.
So I was inspired to write, it's called Getting Back. Okay, honey.
Why don't you let him tell a story?
You want to tell a story?
Want to tell a story? What's the movie about?
Story? Now he's being shy.
Quick talk.
Okay. So it's about Elliot getting back to his folks, but there's also multiple meetings to the title Getting Back. And I was inspired to write it because I thought, you know, six is such a great age because they're still so young and innocent. And also you can see them growing into the person they're going to become.
Mm-hmm.
And he still uses a lot of imagination in his play. And so I'm like, how can I, honey, I need this. How can I write a story about the best parts about, okay, no growling, okay, about being this age? And so I started with these fun scenes of him using his imagination to get through something. And in this case, I ended up writing it about him getting lost, a child getting lost in the woods during a camping trip. And then, okay, honey, Mama's trying to talk and she can hear everything. Okay, so let me talk for a second. and so then I just took that story and then built, experiences around it to make it an interesting drama. And so what ends up being is this little boy, Elliot, who gets lost while his family is camping. And the parents are going through their own trauma because they had lost their older son 6 months before this. And so, okay. And then there's, it's this track where Elliot is finding his way through the woods with his dog. So Coda, our dog, makes an appearance in the movie too, because he's so beautiful. and then the parents have their own track and they're kind of going through everything you go through in a relationship in a very sped up way, because they're dealing with their own trauma of having lost their son. And then now Elliot's lost. So they go through these kind of highs and lows of like doing their own couples therapy while they're searching for their son.
Yeah. Oof. Sounds deep. Sounds panicky.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. And they get into some, you know, what I feel like are real conversations about how we deal with grief and how we come back from it. Because, you know, there's a lot of information out there about when parents go through a traumatic event, like losing a child, how difficult it is to get back into that relationship, because you now have this shared trauma. And so it's just about that and how we deal with grief and how we can find hope on the other side of that. And that really about being present with the people that's, you know, exist in our life and still holding on to that memory and that cherishing, you know, that person that is now no longer part of our active lives, but how mm-hmm. they can show up and still provide insight and guidance, you know, through our memories of them, basically.
Yeah. What prompted you to make the movie about, like, so heavy about kind of the subject of grief and, like, where'd that come from?
Well, you know, I lost my dad unexpectedly last year, so that Sorry. Was part of it. Yeah, thank you. He had liver cancer and he didn't know it for years. So it was very quick. He got sick in June and then passed in September. So it was very fast. So, you know, and just how you go, you know, they always say there's five stages of grief, but, mm-hmm. you know, now we know that even though there's five stages, it's a roller coaster, right?
And
you
it's can. It's all over the place.
Yeah. So I think I was feeling a lot about that. How hard it is to sometimes communicate that even with people that you're close to. And even if you have people who experience the exact same thing, the way they experience it is completely different. And mm-hmm. so I was just, you know, thinking about how, you know, my dad was a very good guy and also very private in a lot of ways and, you know, didn't talk a lot. And so I kind of based all the characters taking pieces of personalities and then exaggerating them, right? Because mm-hmm. I feel like that's like what storytelling is. You find mm-hmm. one thing to zone in on and then you exaggerate it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of how it just developed. And it's like when I wrote the interactions that Elliot was having in the woods, you know, I just said, you know, what's the story around this? Like what can make this more impactful? And it kind of made sense to have the family have gone through this trauma and, you know, my mom dealing with her own cancer mm-hmm. and then my dad with his cancer. And so it just kind of felt like a interesting story for having Max having had cancer, you know, it's just like a theme. So.
And cathartic yeah. for you. Mm-hmm. And it's like an exploration of grief and love and all that goes in it. And I actually lost my father to cancer too, actually a few years back. And it's funny you say that because I had him with me today. I always wear the anchor earrings when I need him to come with me to something. I had something important this morning and I was nervous about. I just took him out because I have these headphones on. But Like, it's just funny that you're saying this right now. Like, I feel like he just showed up and was like, hey, you did good. You know what I mean? Because yeah. He was a sailor. So I wear my anchor earrings whenever I need him to be with me. I call him with me. That Maya Angelou quote, I call everyone with me. She says, there's this thing where she says where when I have to do something that is big or I have to go on stage, I call everybody with me who's passed before me. I say, come on, I need you on my shoulders. I need you here with me. Let's go. And it's interesting you said that.
Yeah,
and that's absolutely. Grief and mm-hmm. love and all the things that go with it. And we all grieve very differently. So true. Well, where can everybody find the film or can they find it yet? And what's the story with the film?
So we're in post-production right now. You can follow us on social media to get updates. It's Getting Back Film is on Instagram. And then on Facebook, it's Getting Back a River Wild Film. We also have a website, riverwildfilms.com. It's obvious where we came up with our production name.
I figured it out.
And yeah, my hope is that we're going to enter it into some film festivals. Right now I have the screenplay being entered into film festivals. And that's pretty exciting because so far it's been selected for four film festivals. It placed second at the Los Angeles International. And then I'm traveling to Kentucky next month for it's a finalist there as well. So
congrats. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's go. I mean, we got to uplift these stories that are created by queer folk. Let's go. Yeah. I say queer. Unboxed folks. That's what I should have said. There you go.
Yeah. Unboxed folks.
Yes. So, you know, everybody needs to lift it up and find it wherever you can and go follow. And don't you have a GoFundMe or something?
Yeah, we did have an Indiegogo site that has ended, but we're going to do another post-production one. And that information will be on our social media and on our Facebook when we get that started. We're hoping in July we're going to do a post-production GoFundMe. You know, and this film, you know, the story about the grief was so universal. I didn't want people to, because I did think about having it be, you know, a queer family instead of, you know, a straight family. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted the story out there without other people's own biases getting involved in it. Mm. But my next film, because I'm already thinking about the next one, is actually going to be about our fertility issues and journey. So yeah,
here for that.
I am looking forward to writing, sitting down and getting that one written and having a more diverse cast and be employing some queer and diverse creatives to do that one. So
yeah.
So I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. I love it. And I appreciate y'all coming in and chatting with me, even amidst the mayhem.
Well, yeah. I appreciate your tolerance of the mayhem. And yes, that is our life.
Yes, there's no my quiet life moments. Too. It's my life too. My kids just happen to be at school right now. So I'm lucky. But thank you so much. And it was nice meeting you, River. I know he can't hear me. Thanks for taking part. And y'all need to keep in touch, and we'll put everything in the show notes so people can find the links. So go down to the show notes, y'all, and click the links and do all the things, follow the things, and uplift. Let's go. Happy Pride. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to say one last thank you to our sponsor, California Cryobank. What you're going to want to do is use code QueerFam25 to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you, California Cryobank.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Do you ever feel like you entered parenthood completely overwhelmed and underprepared? Yeah, me too. Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we literally talk about all the things that no one told us before we had kids, and we let you in on the things that you really should have known about. Everything from navigating postpartum anxiety to mastering the art of making mom friends, and from introducing solids to tackling tantrums and potty training, we truly cover it all. And whether you're a first-time parent or a seasoned pro, this podcast is a go-to resource for honest advice, relatable stories, and plenty of laughs along the way. So join me and our guests each week on No One Told Us to feel less alone and more empowered.